The Free For All Roundtable.
Round one.
On round one, Laura Babcock is here from Power Group Communications and host of The O Show. Matt Gurney, journalist, co-founder of The Line, which is an online magazine. And John Burnside is here, Toronto City Councillor. We'll start with the big story of the day. The acquittal came in yesterday afternoon. Everybody has a take on it and, you know, always worth remembering. At its core is a family that has been devastated by the death of an officer in the line of duty. And another family is probably going to have to deal with this for the rest of their lives as well. The man who was at the wheel, Umar Zamir, was acquitted yesterday. Matt Gurney, I'm going to start with you.
Shouldn't have been charged. Absolutely should have been acquitted. This is obviously a tragedy. John, I'm glad you led with that. If you hadn't, I would have. I feel absolutely terrible for the officer here. But not only was this the right call based on everything that is publicly known about the case, but also there's precedent for this, and I'm working on a column about this now. Years ago, there was an incident in Quebec where the police raided a home, and the homeowner opened fire on the intruders and killed one of the police officers, and he was acquitted because it was later determined that the officers were doing kind of a middle-of-the-night raid to execute a search warrant, and they hadn't properly identified themselves as police officers. I was thinking about that case a lot in the last couple of weeks, kind of as the trial was continuing. I understand how disappointing and how frustrating this is for the police officers here, but everything about this suggested that this would meet the legal threshold of valid self-defense. And that's not even touching on the fact, and I think we do have to touch on the fact, that it looks like the police testimony in this case was veering awfully close to what we might call perjury here. The case for the Crown completely collapsed on first contact with reality at this trial. I think, you know, the police are obviously frustrated and angry, and I'm sympathetic to them because they lost their colleague. But on the behalf of Torontonians and Ontarians and Canadians, I have a few questions for them.
Yeah, Laura Babcock, the widow of the police officer, said she was hoping there would be some accountability. And I think there's this disconnect between the tragedy of the death of a police officer and the fact that it was actually an accident.
And for the widow, I mean, what else could she say or could she feel? You know, you're never going to feel like justice is done when you lose someone that you love. You're always going to be searching for reason for why it happened and who was responsible. But setting, you know, if we look at some of the other comments that we heard this morning, you know, the police union brought up the idea of these bigger issues happening in our society, you know, a lack, you know, of respect for police growing and for the rule of law. And I think it's incredibly important for the police chief to take seriously what the judge said with the suggestion that there might have been collusion lining up this testimony. That's not going to help build more trust with police service. If the police want the people to have a better relationship and a better sense of trust, then they have to show themselves to be transparent on this, to be pursuing it, to be making sure that there may be accountability for those officers if they were involved in anything untoward in that regard, and not to just kind of shove this under the rug. And the bigger question around, you know, the rule of law and whether or not there's an erosion around that, we are walking in today to history making. We've got the, you know, the first time ever a former president of the United States as a criminal defendant in a trial starting today. And the rule of law and belief in a jury and a jury's ability to carry out the rule of law and to maintain justice and come to a verdict, it's going to be hugely important and very much challenged by the president in this. So I think if we want to preserve the rule of law, we have to say a jury heard the evidence and it didn't meet the level, and that happens. And, you know, have to move on and make sure that the police officers did their job.
John Burnside, curious about your take, because I think most of the listeners know you used to be a police officer.
Yeah, the only thing I will say to defend some of the comments from the police is that I think it's human nature to want someone to be held accountable for something that happens. And we see this with the police. Police often make mistakes, misinterpreted information in a high-stress situation, no charges are laid. or they're withdrawn and people lose their minds. So it cuts both ways. Here's what I'm surprised at. I thought, we had this discussion a few months ago. I actually thought the charges were going to be withdrawn, speaking to officers that I knew, not involved in the case, but just given what was going on. That's the first surprise. Second surprise is the Crown. The Crown knows what the officers, how they're going to testify. And the fact that it was some surprise that there was this information coming from officers of where the officer was hit at the front of the car, and then there was no actual evidence to back that up, that's the second thing. The third thing is pleasantly surprised by the class of the lawyer who, in those comments after the trial. Fourth surprise was the chief. I think he's the best chief we've had in 40 years. Very disappointed in his comments. It looked like a statement from his comms department, and I have a real problem with the comms department. He should have just said, "Look, we're hurting. We're going to pick up the pieces. We respect the decision." And because what officers need and what the system needs is faith in the system, which is saying, "Hey, the evidence is showing something. We put our emotions aside and we go with the evidence."
Let's move on to the renaming of Black Creek Pioneer Village, and they're going to take the word pioneer out. And I thought, okay, well, I'm, you know, did debate in high school and university. Definition of terms is key. A pioneer, a person who is among the first to explore or settle a new country or area. Laura Babcock, when you look at it through that lens, then maybe it's time to get rid of the word. But at the same time, I certainly can appreciate the exasperation of people that every week we're changing something.
Like you, John, I looked up the terminology, and what smacks is so frustrating is the idea of first. Obviously, they weren't the first to be here. It's the Indigenous peoples who were here. And so that whole idea of, you know, discovering and settling and all the rest of it, we need to educate around and say, you know, enough. We didn't discover anything. We didn't settle anything. They were already here. But they did settle it for their culture. In other words, their culture were the first to come from their culture and to set up here. And I don't think that we erase things that happen in history. It's important. I loved going to pioneer villages as a kid. I learned a lot. I think it's important to know our history. And so, you know, I think these things can be an add. They don't have to be a subtraction. You don't have to take out the word pioneer. There were pioneers. But what you have to do is define, you know, what their role was within the bigger picture. Let's open up the aperture for our children to understand. There were Indigenous people here. What happened with them? What was going on? What were their contributions? You know, what was their history? And so I like that they're going to be adding in some of that Indigenous history and knowledge and working with Indigenous groups to make sure that people who go to the Pioneer Village have a better experience, a more factual and holistic experience of what was going on at that time in the history of this country. But I don't necessarily think that pulling a name down is going to change anything. It's more about an add-on. Let's add on to the education so that people get the full story and can respect everyone's contributions to this country.
Well, and John Burnside, you're a lover of words, so I think you'd appreciate sometimes there's the pure definition of a word, and then there's what people think of. And I think when you say pioneer, people think of Little House on the Prairie.
And the Pilgrims and all those things.
Yeah.
And I'm embarrassed because I didn't look that up. But I am not going to engage in circumlocution, which is the use of many words in an attempt to be vague or evasive.
Thank you.
And so to that end, I think the problem is people equate changing things, like when we're talking about changing names, to blaming. Right. And the devil's in the details. I have zero issue with them changing things and bringing in the fuller history, as it were. I think we've gone from the Europeans being the heroes to now it's Europeans are the villains. And I think the truth is somewhere in between. And if we can all get to that point, I think, you know, that'll dial things back quite a bit.
Yeah, interesting that John should put it that way, Matt, because yes, the language over the last few years has been about settlers and not in a good connotation, and about colonization and all that stuff.
And I think that will continue for some time. I don't think we're done with that. And I think that is part of a continuing process of historical reappraisal. And that's one that I'm welcome. Like, I think we should spend more time studying our history, and that should be a dynamic process. We should bring in new perspectives on that. But I would suggest that the process probably isn't over yet. It's going to continue. We're going to see more of it. The pendulum is going to swing on this one. And if we actually want it to be a meaningful conversation, if we want it to be a conversation that leaves people better informed, better educated, better off, then it has to be deeper than a branding change. And the concern I have, and it's a concern that I have widely, not just with the Pioneer Village, is quite simply that we don't have those deeper conversations. We have a task force struck by a committee to figure out how to be more inclusive an environment, and they come back with a new logo and a new name. I'll judge this ultimately by the revamped curriculum. I think, as Laura and the counselor have both said, there actually is great opportunity here to do a really good job making this a better historical institution. But we've all seen examples before where you change the brand, you install a couple new board members, and you declare mission accomplished. We'll have to see if this is more of the same.
What do you folks make of these posters around town? Steal from Loblaws Day. I won't give the date because I don't want to enable. There are a lot of people out there who think that theft is a form of activism, when in fact it actually is just theft. John Burnside.
Well, I mean, we all know one of the reasons for high prices is because of all of the theft.
Yeah, you're right.
But hey, the good news is now that Loblaws sells beer, you can go steal your groceries and your beer and not have to go to the LCBO.
There you go. Matt Gurney, is there a level of Abby Hoffman here?
That's funny. I think people, we were just saying a minute ago, in a different context, how some of the debates we've been having around our history in recent years have not been fully rational. We could maybe politely say it that way, where it's been a lot of heated rhetoric and not an actual lot of good faith studying. I understand the cost of living crisis is hurting Canadians. I think probably every last one of us, either on this panel right now or out there in listening to us, we've all had that sticker shock experience looking at a grocery bill and going, oh my God. So I get that, but I don't support hooliganism, I don't support crime, and I really get the feeling that probably a lot of this is just all part of some dumb social media viral campaign I don't want to think about.
Yeah, Laura Babcock, it's entirely possible this ends at the posters.
Well, I hope so. And listen, I thought Roblaws as a hashtag was quite clever. The idea that, you know, that you were talking earlier, John, why is there so much of a fixation maybe, or why does Galen Weston and Loblaws take so much of the heat for big grocery? Well, it's because of the price, the bread fixing scandal, right? And people have an impression of that. They're also the ones who are out there the most, you know, and the hammer, there's a Japanese expression, I believe it's Japanese, it says that the nail that sticks out gets the hammer. So they stick out quite a bit, and so they're going to get a lot of the publicity and the backlash for whatever's going on at the grocery store, whether they're directly involved in the prices or not. They are just that lightning rod for price, you know, all these issues around inflation and grocery prices, and I think they deserve a lot of the criticism. But the idea of telling people to go out and actually steal from grocery stores, I hate it on two levels. One, I don't think that any good campaign should involve asking people to break the law. There's other ways to get your goal done without that. And the other thing, too, is that there is an incredible homeless crisis and people who are literally starving in our communities and, you know, may, in fact, resort to trying to get access to food illegally. I hope they never have to, but if they do, like, you know, there are real people who really, really need access to food. Don't go in there with just to make a point and start stealing from Loblaws. I think that just falls down on everybody in the worst way.
Thank you all. Laura Babcock, Matt Gurney, and John Burnside.
Catch the Roundtable, round one at 7:45, round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. News Talk 1010, Toronto.